Welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. This month, I'd like to showcase an early member of ART. No, she wasn't an old-time radio actor, but she rubbed shoulders with the best of them. Joan Parker, Dave Parker's wife, came into our microphones in 2004 at an acting workshop. She was spectacular. Her voice was captured on 8 of ART's shows. Cole Hornaday adapted a Professor Challenger story written by Arthur Conan Doyle called The Poison Belt. Professor Challenger thinks the Earth is swimming into a poison belt in the ether and is producing odd behaviors and even death on Earth. Recorded in 2008, here's part one of The Poison Belt.
I'm Ted Malone, newspaper reporter. It was a typical morning at the London Daily Gazette as I made my way around the open desks of the City Room, last battlement before the office of Mr. McCarthy, our editor-in-chief.
Well, lad, I fear it's fallen to you to interview that old devil down to Rotherfield.
You don't mean Professor Challenger, Mr. McCarthy?
Aye, just the one. Honestly, our boys would sooner interview a loose alligator in the zoo. But Malone, you could do it, being that you are an old friend and fellow explorer.
Why, it was to request a leave of absence in order to visit Professor Challenger that I came by.
Capital.
The fact is, Mr. McCardle, it's the anniversary of our South American adventure, and the professor's asked our whole party down to his house to celebrate.
Splendid. You'll be able to get his opinions. In any other man, I'd say it was all moonshine. But the fellow has made good once, and he may be so again.
Get what out of him, sir?
Why, haven't you seen his letter on scientific possibilities in today's times?
No, I'm afraid not.
Here, read it aloud. I'll be glad to hear it again, for I'm not sure now that I have Professor Challenger's meaning clear in my head at all.
Sir, I have read with great
amusement, not wholly unmixed with annoyance, the wholly fatuous letter of Mr. James Wilson McPhail, which lately appeared in your columns, upon the subject of the blurring of Fraunhofer's lines. Now, McPhail dismisses the matter as no significance. To a wider intelligence, it may seem of very great possible importance, so great as to involve the ultimate welfare of every man, woman, and child upon this planet. To clarify the situation by the use of a homily analogy that, I pray, will be within the limits of the intelligence of our readers.
Bloody wonder that Professor Challenger is, Malone. He'd put up the feathers of a sucking dove and set up a riot in a Quaker's meeting.
Suppose, if you will, that our solar system is but a small bundle of connected corks that was launched in a sluggish current upon a voyage across the Atlantic. The corks drift slowly from day to day with the same conditions all around them. They might possibly float up against a ship or a sleeping whale or become entangled in seaweed. Deep in this ocean of ether in which we are currently floating, might the current not drift us into belts of ether that are novel and have properties of which we have never conceived? From my observation, there is a change somewhere. For good or ill, we do not know. But the wisest man is he who holds himself ready for the unexpected. For instance, the mysterious and nigh universal outbreak of illness noted in your pages this very morning as having broken out upon the Isle of Sumatra. Could it not bear a connection to such a cosmic change? I assert it is an unimaginative numbskull who is too dense to perceive that it is well within the bounds of scientific possibility. Yours faithfully, George Edward Challenger.
What's your opinion, Mr. Malone?
Well, I must confess my total ignorance of the subject of the blurring of Fraunhofer's lines.
Look here, Malone. See this range of spectral bands right here?
Yes.
And these black crossbars bisecting the colors here near the end?
Yes.
Those black bands are Fraunhofer's lines. The colors just represent light itself. It is these black bands that count. They act as a barometer and vary according to whatever produces the light. These lines have begun to blur over this last week.
Well, has the public taken any interest in this change?
Nay, the public has had no interest in the matter. But this letter of Professor Challenger's in the Times will make them wake up and see the light, I'll wager.
And this outbreak of disease in Sumatra?
Aye, it's a far cry from some blurred lines on a sheet of paper to an epidemic in the tropics. But that brute force of nature knows of which he speaks more than any other man on the continent.
Mr. Malone, sir, a telegram for you.
Who's it from, boy?
Professor Challenger, sir.
Speak of the devil!
Malone, secure for us one tank oxygen before departure to Rotherfield. Challenger. Oxygen? Why? Whatever for?
Hey, young Ted Malone.
Ah, hello, Professor Summerlin.
Oh, don't tell me you received one of those preposterous telegrams calling for oxygen as well. Why could he not order it direct?
As I commenced to reacquaint myself with my former traveling companion, the Challenger's now world-famous lost world, an unusual sight drew our attention from several platforms down the line.
Not another row. What has gotten into Londoners today? Why, in the taxi ride over, we twice nearly had collisions with other vehicles steered by equally erratic drivers. Oh, Lord Roxton! John Roxton!
Oh, hello, Herr Professor Summerlin. Hello, Malone, young fella. have you two become oxygen suppliers as well?
Well, have you read Professor Challenger's letters in the Times? Something related to his current theory, I
imagine. Oh, stuff and nonsense.
Gentlemen, I believe they are calling us to action.
Challenger is a clever man, we've all conceded. Why, look at his hat. There's a 60-ounce brain inside it. A big engine running smooth, turning out clean work. But he is a born charlatan. You've heard me tell him so to his very face. A born charlatan! With a dramatic flair for putting himself in the limelight. Things have been too quiet of late, so friend Challenger is undoubtedly aching to hear the public talking about him. Good God, you don't imagine he actually believes the stuff and nonsense about it. Change in the ether and danger to the human race.
Once we found our way to our first-class smoker, Professor took his seat like an old white raven, croaking and shaking with laughter.
Was there ever such a cock and bull story in this life?
A wave of anger passed through me as I listened to Summerlin carrying on, so it was aggravating to hear him speak thus of a leader who had been the source of all our fame and given us such experiences as no man had ever enjoyed. I was on the verge of a hot retort when Lord John interjected.
You and Challenger have had your shares of scraps, but each time you found yourself down for the count in seconds. Confess it, Herr Professor. That great ape is outside your weight class.
Besides, Professor Challenger has been a good friend to every one of us. Whatever his faults may be, he is as straight as a line, and I don't believe he ever speaks evil of his comrades behind their backs.
Well said, my lad. Come here, Professor, and we're not going to quarrel at this time of day. We've seen too much together.
Perhaps, but I have my own judgment, sir, and I use it my own way.
I felt my aggression toward the old professor begin to bubble and rise like something hot and molten.
I tell you, sir, that I have a brain of my own. If it pleases you to believe this rigmarole about ether and lines upon the spectrum, do so by all means. But do not ask one who is older and wiser than yourself to share in your folly.
But have you not heard, sir, of the great illness spreading across the market? The lights that remain unlit across the Strait of Sumatra.
Stuff and nonsense!
Well, it's no folly, Professor. Summerlin, my editor received a telegram.
Oh, frankly, there should be limits to human folly. Do you for an instant suppose that there is an English ether and a Sumatran ether? Perhaps you believe the ether in Kent is in some way superior to the ether of Surrey.
I don't profess to be a scientific man, though I have heard somewhere that the science of one generation is frequently the fallacy of the next.
Easy, lad. Now, the professor must concede that it doesn't take much common sense to see something strange is going on in various parts of the world and might show an effect over there which would only develop here later on.
When applying words like might and may to your argument, you can prove just about anything. Pigs may fly. Yes, sir, pigs may fly, but sadly, they don't. And so ends the argument. Professor Challenger has filled you both with his nonsense, and you've become incapable of reason.
I must say, Professor Summerlee, that your manners do not seem to have improved since I last had the pleasure of meeting you.
Stuff and nonsense! You lordlings are not accustomed to hearing the truth, and your title offers you little aught but ignorance.
Upon my word, sir, if you were a younger man, you would not dare to speak to me in so offensive a fashion.
I would have you know, sir, that young or old, there has never been a time in my life when I was afraid to speak my mind to such an ignorant cock.
Like a wave, past memories of our former good comradeship began to wash over me. That it should have come to this, insults and abuse. Suddenly I was sobbing and loud, gulping, uncontrollable sobs which refused to be concealed.
Oh, come, lad, it's not all that.
Oh, buck up now, young fellow.
It's such a pity.
You're ill, young fellow. That's what's amiss with you. I thought you'd come over queer when we met on the platform.
You need not waste your sympathy, Lord John. These tears are purely alcoholic. This man has been drinking. By the way, Lord John, I called you a coxcomb just now, which was perhaps unduly severe, but it put me in mind of a small talent which I possess. Did you know that as a schoolboy, I once had a well-deserved reputation as a grade-A farmyard imitator? Perhaps I can help to pass the time by sharing with you some of my better impersonations. Oh, try my coxcrow.
Surely you jest.
My imitation of the clucking hen having just laid an egg was considered rather above average in its day, too. Might I venture?
My word. poor devil, he's gone mad as a hatter, but strangely, it puts me in mind of a safari I'd taken with a certain Indian Raja. We'd struck out early one dawn. The sky was a molten umber color, just spectacular. And I vividly recall the Raja's porters adorned in matching pajamas of a very natty purple silk. Completely inappropriate for a jungle fair, I must say so myself.
And now for my North American canary.
That's just...
Waldenfield Station. All out for Waldenfield Station.
Well, it was I who disembarked first, drying my eyes with my handkerchief, still shaking from my bout of a spontaneous hysterics. I lifted my eyes to find Professor Challenger himself awaiting us at the platform.
Young Malone, why, whatever is wrong?
Yeah, and that's when I reminded the Raja that the adult male water buffalo is known to charge when fired upon. You don't say, said his majesty. Well, I do say, quoth I.
Professor Challenger simply greeted the three of us with an amused handshake, an encouraging smile, and a strangely enigmatic look. He then quietly helped us to carry our bags and cylinders of oxygen to his large motor car, chauffeured by the ever-impassive Austin. Our journey led us up a winding hill and out into the beautiful countryside. I sat in front with Austin, but behind me, my three companions seemed to be all talking at once. Though I did my ever best to ignore the dull roar in my back, I could not help but make out the sounds of a fierce scientific debate. Professor Summerlee, on occasion, punctuating his arguments with a spontaneous turkey cobble or cockscrow. And all the while, Lord Ruxton struggled on with his perpetually epic tale of the Raja and the water buffalo. It was then that Austin slanted his mahogany face toward me and, without taking his eyes from the road, said,
I'm under notice.
Dear me, whatever for?
Not certain, really. This will be my 47th time.
Everything seemed so strange today. Everyone said queer, unexpected things. It was like a dream. Why? When do you go?
I don't.
But then why?
If I was to go, who would look after him? Who would he get to serve him?
Someone else?
No, sir. No one would stay a week. If I was to go, that house would run down like a watch with the mainspring out. I wouldn't have the heart. He and the missus would be like Two babes left out in a bundle. I've served him for 10 years, and I'm very fond of him, and mind you, he's a great man when all's said and done. It's an honor to serve him.
And before I knew it, the habitually taciturn Awesome's weeping like a schoolgirl to a most contagious effect.
Good God, what's come over you two? Jokes of bloody restraint!
We reached the Challenger estate, passing up the curving drive lined with rhododendron bushes, and behind stood a low brick house decked out with white woodwork, very comfortable and pretty. Mrs. Challenger, a dainty smiling figure, stood in the doorway to welcome us.
Well, my dear, here are our visitors. We don't get many visitors here. No, no love lost between our neighbors and us, is there, dear?
It's dreadful, dreadful. George is always quarreling with everyone. How are we having a friend in the countryside?
Well, it simply enables me to concentrate all my attention upon my incomparable wife.
And with that, Professor Challenger passed his short, thick arm about Mrs. Challenger's waist, pressing his hairy face against her alabaster cheek. The Challengers were quite a pair, an hirsute gorilla and winsome gazelle in human form.
Come, these gentlemen are tired from their journey, and luncheon should be ready. This way, gentlemen.
Did you observe anything unusual upon your journey from town?
The only thing that I observed was that our young Malone here has not improved in his manners during the years that have passed.
Well, Summerlee, we all tend to get a bit prosy sometimes. The young fellow meant no real harm. After all, he's an international, so if he takes half an hour to describe a game of football, he has more right to do it than most folks.
Half an hour to describe a game? Why, it was you, Lord John Ruxton, that took up the entire train ride. Some long-winded story about a water buffalo. But Professor Summerlee will be my witness.
I can hardly judge which of you was the most utterly wearisome. I declare to you, Challenger, I never wish to hear of footballs or water buffaloes as long as I live.
I never said one word about football.
So early in the day, too. It is indeed deplorable. As I sat there in sad but thoughtful silence...
Silence? Why, Summerlee, you were doing a music hall turn of barnyard imitations the entire way.
You are pleased to be facetious, Lord John, to be sure.
Why, dash it all, this is clear madness. Each one of us seems to know what the others did, and none of us knows what he did himself. Let's put it all together from the first. We got into a first-class smoker, that's clear, ain't it? And then we began to quarrel over Professor Challenger's letter in the Times.
Oh, you did you?
You said, Professor Summerlee, that there was no possible truth in his contention.
Our worthy Summerlee is, not for the first time, somewhat out of touch with the facts of the situation. Now, gentlemen, I cannot make my point better than by detailing to you what I have myself done this morning. For several years, we have had in our service a housekeeper, one Sarah, a woman of severe and forbidding aspect. Now, as I sat alone at breakfast, it suddenly entered into my head that it would be entertaining, perhaps, instructive, to test the limits of the woman's imperturbability. I devised a simple but effective experiment. Having upset a small vase of flowers, I rang the bell and slipped under the table. As Sarah leaned over to replace the vase, I protruded my head and sank my teeth into the calf of her leg.
Good God, Challenger. Such nonsense.
The experiment was successful beyond belief. For some moments, she stood paralyzed, staring at my head. Then, with a shriek, she tore herself free and rushed from the room. I pursued her with thoughts of an explanation, but she flew down the drive. And some minutes later, I was able to pick her out with my field glasses, traveling rapidly in a southwesterly direction.
Challenger, Any credibility you've gained in my eyes over the last few years has just been shot clean through.
Well, I only tell this anecdote for what it is worth. Has it conveyed anything to your minds? What do you think of it, Lord John?
I think you'll be getting into some serious trouble someday if you don't put a brake on, Professor.
Summerlee?
You should drop all work immediately, Challenger, and take 3 months in a German watering place.
Oh, profound, profound. Now, my young friend, is it possible that wisdom may come from you where your seniors have failed?
Of course, that's it. We're all poisoned.
Precisely. We're all poisoned.
Stuff and nonsense.
Our planet has swum into a very poisoned belt of ether. And is now flying deeper and deeper at a rate of some millions of miles a minute. But the symptoms can be checked and controlled. After my little outburst of high spirits, I sat down and reasoned with myself. I put it to myself that I had never before felt impelled to bite anyone of my household. The impulse had then been an abnormal one.
Well, Challenger, what is your opinion as to the present outlook?
It is my opinion, gentlemen, that we will bear witness to the end of the world.
End Stuff of the and world. Nonsense, sir.
Now, listen closely, my friends. Conceive of a bunch of grapes covered by some infinitesimal but noxious bacillus. The gardener passes it through a disinfecting medium, and they are gone. Our gardener is, in my opinion, about to dip the solar system and sterilize we human bacillus that twist and wriggle upon its surface.
And then I put it to you directly. May there not be some fallacy in your information or your reasoning?
None.
Look out of the window. There's the sun shining as brightly as ever in the blue sky. There are the heather and the flowers and the birds, and folks enjoying themselves on the golf links, and the workers in the fields. And you tell us that they and we may be upon the very brink of destruction because of rumors from Sumatra?
Well, we're not nervous folk, and you know that full well, Challenger, but you mean to tell us that what we assumed to be a weekend visit has brought us full bore into Judgment Day.
What was the last news when you left London, Malone?
Well, I was at the Gazette office until about 10. Reuter had just come into the effect that the sickness seemed to be rampant in Sumatra, and that all lighthouses remained unlit.
I am in close touch with both the authorities and the press, so news converges upon me from all parts. From varied accounts, the poison effect begins with mental excitement. The rioting in Paris this morning is said to have been very violent, and the Welsh colliers are in a state of uproar. So far as the evidence at hand can be trusted, symptoms seem to progress reliably through a stimulative stage, succeeded by a certain exaltation and mental lucidity, which, after an appreciable interval, turn to coma, deepening rapidly into death. The progression seems to quite accurately mirror certain vegetable-based nerve poisons.
Gentlemen, if you please, is there no way of warding off the effects of this poison, no antidote?
I fear not, Lord John. Allow me to read from a telegram I received from Marseille at 9:45 this morning. Delirious excitement throughout Provence. A sudden illness attended by coma attacked population this morning. Great numbers dead in the streets. Paralysis of business and universal chaos. I have more of such wires from India and Persia as well as Austria.
Good Lord, what's to be done?
Take our lunch. We have a cook whose omelets are only excelled by her cutlets, and we can but trust that no cosmic disturbance has dulled her excellent abilities.
And indeed, it proved to be a very merry meal. It's true that we could not forget our awful situation. Life, their faith in the destiny of man, these were the stupendous subjects discussed in that memorable hour. And as the meal progressed, strange, sudden exultations began to jangle in my mind, and tingling in my limbs proclaimed the invisible tide of death
If you please, I'll clear these away, sir.
Austin!
Yes, sir.
I thank you for your faithful service.
I have done my duty, sir.
I'm expecting the end of the world today, Austin.
Yes, sir. What time, sir?
Cannot say, Austin. Before evening.
Very good, sir. Will there be anything else?
No, Austin.
It was Mrs. Challenger who finally voiced that question foremost in our minds.
It won't be painful, will it, George?
No, my dear. No more than laughing gas at the dentist's.
But that was a pleasant sensation.
Hmm. And so might death be.
Is it quite certain, Challenger, that there is nothing we can do?
To save ourselves? Nothing. But to prolong our lives a few hours more and thus see the evolution of this mighty tragedy? Most definitely.
The oxygen.
Exactly! The oxygen!
But what can oxygen effect in the face of a poisoning of the ether?
My good Summerlee, this etheric poison is most certainly influenced by material agents. I am strongly of the opinion that a gas like oxygen, which increases the vitality and the resisting power of the body, would be extremely likely to delay the poison's effect.
Well, if we got to sit sucking at those tubes like so many babies with their bottles, count me out.
No, there will be no need for that, Lord John, as we have made arrangements. An inspiration we owe chiefly to my wife.
What do you mean?
Oh, we shall render her boudoir airtight using matting and varnished paper.
You don't propose we shall keep out the ether with varnished paper?
Really, Summerlee, sometimes you are damn near perverse at missing the point. It is not to keep the ether out, but the oxygen in. I trust that if we keep a hyper-oxygenated atmosphere, we will be able to retain our senses.
How long will the oxygen last?
I have no idea, dear boy. We will not release the first valve until the symptoms become unbearable. Then we shall dole the gas out as is needed. It may last hours, it may last days. Perhaps now, gentlemen, you will all be so kind as to give me a hand with the cylinders. It seems that the atmosphere about has already grown oppressive.
The chamber that was destined to be the scene of our unforgettable experience was a charmingly feminine sitting room, some 14 or 16 feet square. One door and a window frame had been plastered around with varnished paper so as to be practically sealed.
Two oxygen tubes are ready to be turned on at a moment's notice so that we cannot be taken unawares. At the same time, it would do well not to go far from this room, as the crisis may be a sudden and an urgent one. One moment, please. Yes?
The window overlooked a road curving down the side of the hill. One could see a young nurse wheeling by a perambulator and leading a second child by the hand. The blue trails of smoke from the cottages gave the whole widespread landscape an air of settled order and homely comfort. Nowhere, nowhere in the blue heaven or on the sunlit earth was there a foreshadowing of catastrophe. As a matter of fact, the harvesters were back in the field, and golfers and pairs and foursomes were still streaming around the links. The apparent indifference of these people was simply amazing. These fellows don't seem to feel any ill effects.
Have you ever played golf, Ted?
No, I have not.
Well, young fella, once a game has begun, it would take the crack of doom itself to stop a true golfer.
Yes, thank you, sir. It is much appreciated.
Well, Challenger, what news?
All bad, I fear. Spain and Portugal have fallen silent, and sources tell me no cable messages are being received from South America. North America, in the southern states, after some rioting, succumbed to silence. Belgium, Holland, and Denmark have each in turn been affected. Despairing messages are flashing from every quarter of the globe to the great centers of learning, imploring their advice. Nothing can be done. Yes, one moment. Yes? Oh, Malone, you are wanted.
Hello?
That you, Malone? McArdle here. Malone, there are terrible goings on in London. for God's sake, see if Professor Challenger can suggest anything that can be done.
He can suggest nothing, sir. He regards the crisis as universal and inevitable.
The office has been in perfect pandemonium ever since you left. Half the staff is insensible. I'm weighed down with heaviness myself. From my window, I can see the people hang thick in Fleet Street. Judging by the last telegrams, the whole world is.
Mr. McArdle! Mr. McArdle!
Malone! Hang up that phone. It's no use.
Join us for next week's conclusion of The Poison Belt. We'll return to treasures old and new from ART in just a moment. But first...
Dr. Mainstay! Dr. Mainstay!
For goodness sakes, Flyweight, what is it?
Quick, quick, come to the dig. They found something. Something incredible.
Calm down, Flyweight. What have they found?
It's a box, Doctor. A box made out of plastic.
Plastic? Are you certain?
Yes. It has an old-fashioned recycling symbol on it. We think it's a type that hasn't been produced for at least 5 centuries.
Has anyone opened it yet?
No, sir. We want you to open it.
All right, Flyweight. Let's go. Oh, Spendthrift, where's this box?
Over here, sir. We left it in situ.
Look at it, Doctor. There's even some of the original paint on it.
Let me have that brush, Spendthrift.
Yes, sir.
Has it been mapped?
Yes, sir. We wanted you to extract it.
Give me a pair of gloves. It's the old style, all right, made from petrochemicals. This is terrific. It's in beautiful shape. Oh, not even a crack. Let's get her to the workbench. 35 years in the field and... Well, it's the best specimen of late 20th century plastic I've ever seen.
Open it, sir. Open it.
Who found it?
Spendthrift did, sir.
Spendthrift, you open it.
Are you sure, sir?
Darn right I am. This could be your career.
What about your career, sir?
Heck, my career is over. I'm just waiting for the dust to settle. Open it, Spendthrift.
Okay, here goes.
There's a piece of paper in it.
Okay, Spendthrift, take it out and read it. Be careful, it's likely very brittle.
Read it, Spendthrift, read it.
Now read it out loud, Spendthrift.
www.americanradiotheater.org.
Gee, Dr. Mainstay, what does it mean?
Well, in the late 20th and through the 21st century, there was a revival of what was called audio drama. People listened to stories presented in sound format only, not even any two-dimensional pictures, let alone full immersion simulation.
Really? You think this American radio theater was part of that revival?
What about the double U's and the O-R-G and those two dots?
Didn't you two study the Internet? That was the first step to constant connectivity. Look at the logo, a microphone, and the acronym ART. Yes, this is the sort of thing that could really establish you, Spendthrift.
Oh, thank you, sir. Hey, there's something else in the box. It's a button. It says ART, visualize audio drama.
There you go, Spendthrift. There's your PhD paper in a plastic box.
We return to treasures old and new from ART. Let's listen to some music from G.I. Jive.
Here's Jill and the G.I. Jive.
Hi, you fellas. This is G.I. Jill with G.I. Jive, your daily short but swing session that beams out your way via the AEF jukebox of the air. And today's nickels will be invested in the music of Benny Goodman, Johnny Mercer and the Pied Pipers, Bing Crosby and Artie Shaw. So to set the tempo and start things off with a good swing, Benny Goodman starts spinning to the tune of the Bugle Call Rag.
Mm-hmm.
And if PFC Costello Converse and the Marines of a certain field depot signal company heard that bugle call rag, everything's under control. And now we've got to pass the word to the Coast Guardsmen at Navy 4-9. Tom, Steve, Mike, Clint, Flat Top, and Baldy at Navy 4-9 have reason to doubt that there is such a tune as Accentuate the Positive. Well, get set to be convinced and latch onto the affirmative, because Johnny Mercer and the Pied Pipers are going to sing it for you right now.
Gather around me, everybody. Gather around me while I preach some. Feel a sermon coming on me. The topic will be sin, and that's what I'm again. If you wanna hear my story, then settle back and just sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right. You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark?
Man, they said we better accept. You hate the positive, even. My hate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative.
Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
You got spread joy. I'll give the maximum joy. Pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene.
You got to accentuate the positive,
yes.
I need the negative and latch
yes,
on
yes.
To the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
No, don't mess with Mr.
Well, how about it, Navy 4-9? Are you convinced? If not, let me know and spin it again. And this seems a likely spot to tell you all that anytime you want to hear anything in the way of a phonograph record, please let me know. If it's round and it's got grooves on it, you shall hear it. So drop me a note in care of G.I. Jive, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. Now, all of you who requested I'll Get By, stand by, because it's coming up just as soon as I make the proper dedications. It's for Sergeant Crockett at APO 565, Sergeants Drury, Lewis, Leslie, Sledley, Samuels, and Bell at 261, Sergeant Moss and the gang at 610, PSC Busman and the Dit Happy gang at 322, all of you who hail from Omaha, Nebraska, Steward's Mate M.H. Lockett, Martin at 322, Sergeant Nichols at APO 610. Some of you wanted other people to do this one, but I couldn't locate any records, so here's hoping you'll all settle for Bing Crosby. Here it is, I'll Get By.
I'll get by as long as I have you. Though there be rain and darkness too, I'll see it through. Poverty may come to me, that's true, But what care I, say I'll get by as long as I have you.
Of requests have arrived for Stardust, so dedications on this will have to be by the numbers. For APO 709 25 677 826 928, Navy number 66, APO 720, and APO 565. Stardust by Artie Shaw. Thank you. Tommy Dorsey's Song of India. By T.D. and played through the courtesy of Sergeant Woodward at APO 926 and Stanley Keebler of the Seabees. Now, all you northern gentlemen, listen carefully and you'll find out what makes a southerner a southerner. At the special request of Bob Ditmars and Jim Bynum at Navy 117, Corporal Preston Spinell at 729, Sherm, Joe, the Doc, John, the old man, H.H., Bob, and Wally of the Marines, and Jackson, Sparky, Clint, and Smith of APO 713 Unit 1. It's Bill Harris at his best with That's What I Like About the South.
Won't you come with me to Alabama? Let's go see my dear old mammy. She's frying eggs and broiling hammy. That's what I like about the South. Now there you can make no mistake, where those nerves are never shaky. Ought to taste that layer cakey. That's what I like about the South. She's got baked ribs and candied yams, those sugar-cured Virginia hams, basement full of those berry jams, and that's what I like about the South. Hot corn, bread, and black-eyed peas, you can eat as much as you please, cause it's never out of season. That's what I like about the South. Don't take one. Have two, that dark brown and chocolate too. Suits me, they must suit you, cause that's what I like about the South. It's way, way down where the cane grows tall, down where they say you all walk on in with that southern drawl, cause that's what I like about the South. It's down where they have those pretty queens to keep a dreaming, those dreamy dreams, well, let's sip that absinthe in New Orleans. That's what I like about the South. Old Bob with all the news, got the box, back coat, and the button shoes, but he's all caught up with his union dues, and that's what I like about the South. Here come old Roy down the street, who can't you hear those scuffling feet? He would rather sleep than eat, and that's what I like about the South. time I pass your door. You act like you don't want me tomorrow. Why don't you shake that head and sigh? And I'll go walking right on by. Gone on and on and on. Honey, when you tell me that you love me, then how come you close your eyes? Did I tell you about the place called Do I Diddy? It ain't no town and it ain't no city. It's just awful small, but awful pretty will do what did did. Didn't come here to criticize. I'm not here to sympathize. But don't tell me those no good lies. Was a lying gal I do despise. You love me like I love you, semi 50. PDQ, rose are red and violets are pink. I'm gonna get old 50. I don't. Got backbones and butter beans, ham hocks and turnip greens. You and me in New Orleans, and that's what I like about flowers.
Sort of an old one by Joe Stafford. From the looks of the request, you still like it. I have to dedicate it by the numbers. For the 3rd Division of a certain fighting ship, APO 25-717-15620-986, the medics at APO 34 and APO 37. Okay, fellas, here's your song with Joe Stafford to sing it. I love you. Jive, your all-recorded, all-request program. So let me know what you want to hear. Just drop me a note in care of G.I. Jive, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. Yep, it's that Miller Record of Records. We're always loaded with requests for this one, and as usual, when we have so many requests, I'll have to dedicate this to everyone, because it'd take too long to even read off the APO and FPO numbers. Here it is, In the Mood. ¶¶
Gee, that's all I've got time for today. Have a listen to American Radio Theater's website, www.americanradiotheater.org. We put up a new podcast every month. Next month, join us on radiooutofthepast.org for the Spring Old Time Radio Marathon. It's on April 25th from 9 a.m. Pacific, which is noon Eastern, to 9 p.m. Pacific or midnight Eastern. I'll be playing from 5 p.m. Pacific to 7. See you there!